The views and opinions expressed by the host and their guests on this program are solely their own and do not reflect the official views or positions of WVUA-FM or any affiliated organizations.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Hey everyone, welcome to Right Between the Lines on WVUA, hosted by Joe Snow, me, a current graduate student in UA's Creative Writing MFA. Since this is our inaugural episode, whether you are a friend or a stranger turning the dial on the radio, let me tell you a little bit about my show. Each episode, Right Between the Lines, spotlights a writer in T-Town and they share a piece of their work on air. And then we break it down, discuss it, and get to the heart, the meat, whatever you want to eat of the piece, while also having a conversation with my guest about the relationship between music and writing. The same, different, informing each other. How do they influence the other? Any and all questions are welcome, though, of course, it wouldn't be a radio show without a song break or two. Guests include talented fellow students, graduate and undergrad, faculty, local authors outside of the university, and possibly even award-winning visiting authors. With that being said, I am flattered to introduce my dear friend, our first ever guest, Madeline Sims. Madeline Sims is a creative with Midwestern roots. She is concerned with how our unique ecologies inform language and believes in a place-based pedagogical approach to learning. Madeline is the recipient of the 2023 AWP Intro Award in Fiction, and you can find her writing in About Place Journal, Poet Lore, Quarterly West, and elsewhere. Hi, Madeline.
Hello, Joe. Thank you for having me.
My absolute pleasure. So you have a little something for our listeners today, huh?
Yes. I believe I'm set to read a poem of mine, but before we start, I wanted to kind of read this preface. The poem that I'm reading is part of like a larger collection. That's my thesis work. And I'll just go ahead.
Which was just completed. Yes. Madeline is a recent graduate of our MFA program. So big ups to Madeline.
Yes. So thank you for that.
Of course.
and I'm just going to read a little kind of preface and background to the project. And then I'll go ahead and read my poem.
Amazing. Perfect.
Okay. So the St. Mary's Mother and Baby Home in Chum, Galway was one of the many maternity homes established in Ireland by the Catholic Church. This institution was operated by the Bon Secours sisters from 1925 to 1961. Women who were pregnant out of wedlock were sent to the homes to give birth. During their stay, the young mothers were interned and forced to work for a year, up to a year without pay. Women and children endured abuse and neglect at the hands of the Catholic Church. On occasion, children were born into the home and were separated from their mothers without consent, and subsequently placed into foster care or given up for adoption. Mothers and families across Ireland lost contact with their children, some of whom were shipped off and sold in couples in the US and UK, many times illegally. Between 2010 and 2013, local historian Catherine Corliss spearheaded an investigation into the home. She obtained 796 death records of children with no indication of burial. The mystery of their deaths haunted Corliss, a mother and grandmother herself, as she pieced together the tragedy. Corliss and a team of historians discovered an alleged famine burial site to be the unmarked tomb of those missing children. From the fall of 2016 to the winter of 2017, the excavations of this old septic tank produced human remains aged from 35 fetal weeks to 2 or 3 years. The bones of the children remain buried. However, the slow process of exhuming the site began not too long ago. My thesis project is dedicated to these mothers, children, and families affected by the harrowing legacy of the home. I aim to preserve and respect the history surrounding the investigation. It is also my intent to honor and liberate the voices lost through lyric reimagination. Mm-hmm. This poem is a persona poem from the point of view of one of the young girls spending time in the home. The title is Refrained.
All right. Thank you, Madeline.
Refrained. Notes drop from my small window, deciduous. For you, I sing contraband, Elvis. When did music become what we couldn't see but heard? Long before record, there is a voice that carried. When I was a child, I caught sound of a tree smoldering in the garden. Having burned the sick elm for our protection, father withstood young morning with, it had to be done. A lesson, listened to the bark wince and moan. Alleged years became burnt tones that left an ash, gray symphony. Now, from behind my small window, I stoke the dying fire with his last letter, a splinter more painful than rending. Quick pulled from the coals, I refrain, save it from covetous flame. And so the postman's route became my rut, song stuck. Ring around an ash delivers. Who doesn't tire of saying nothing? And so I say a wooden heart carved from a borrowed tune. Another letter to a man who will never sing. She has your nose. My own father taught severance as a virtue. Cut a perfect strip around the bark. Girdled the tree without felling.
Snaps for Madeline. Thank you, Madeline. You just put a poem in the air on air.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Madeline. So yeah, you had mentioned this is a larger part of your thesis, but I don't think we got your thesis title. What did you end up naming that baby?
Yes. So my working title is Our Hands of Silent Slaughter.
Our Hands of Silent Slaughter.
Yes. Wow. Yes.
Wow, that's poignant. Yeah, you gave us some context to this poem and the work of your thesis project with the mother and baby homes in Ireland before reading. Something when we discussed this before getting on air, you had given context to the burial ground that was found. You actually ended up meeting that man, right? Could you tell us a little bit about your time in Ireland and how you came about to this project?
Sure. So when I was like fresh out of college, I was an au pair in Ireland. And I was working and living for this family for just over a year. Mm-hmm. And while I was living there, I came across an installation piece, like an artwork that was in memoriam to this, you know, tragedy. And ever since then, I kind of like became obsessed with these mother and baby homes. Most recently, like about 2 years ago, I got funding from the university to like return back to Ireland. And while I was there, I met with Franny, this gentleman who, when he was a young kid, he stumbled upon the burial grounds and the graves of the 796 children. And kind of like a huge point that he made in talking with me was like not only to, you know, address this tragedy and kind of like reclaim a lot of these narratives that were lost or quite literally buried, but also to like highlight, you know, in this excavation, in this work, there is kind of this glimmer of hope and like reuniting families that have since discovered that they're connected to one of these homes in some ways, and just to kind of really like not just harp on the abuses of the Catholic Church, which definitely should totally be harped upon, but you know, just a little bit to provide like some kind of nuance.
Yeah, like where there is darkness, there's also light, of course. Yes. So we can we can have both. And yeah, you said he was a pretty fun guy.
Yeah, correct? He was like really, really funny.
An extra in various, yes. And also a film star himself.
Yes, he was an extra in The Banshees of Inisherin. I don't know if anyone's seen that.
And then the Irish film that Small Things Like These, Cillian Murphy stars, written by...
Yes, Claire Keegan, who wrote about, you know, the story itself is takes place at, like in conversation with, with the mother and baby homes.
Well, with the context to... your history and your past with exploring this project and spending time in Ireland. We had discussed beforehand more of like when you were beginning this thesis project, you had some advice from a thesis professor on how to integrate, since this poem that you just read has so many musical references. We have The Wooden Heart by Elvis Presley. We have Hearing and Finding Music Outside and like The Sound of a Tree and other things. How did you go about, how did music influence the work of this piece and the project in a whole?
So as like a docu-poetics project, part of the advice that I received in terms of like really like delving into research, and on top of research that's done based off of kind of a lot of things that, or a lot of information that has been kind of lost or buried on purpose, like a lot of the women did like wish to remain anonymous who went into these homes, but then a lot of them, you know, were kind of silenced. But part of the advice that I received was to listen to music of the time period. And so I just like, you know, did a Google search and looked at what the top songs in Dublin were at the time. Around the 60s and 50s. And one of them was Wooden Heart by Elvis. And later I found out too, I was working with another advisor who's from Ireland, and she kind of spoke to kind of the cultural impact of these homes in her own life and her own family. And she was saying like a lot of that rock and roll music, a lot of that was contraband. Yes, exactly. And so these women who were, you know, oftentimes like considered really taboo and you know, like
criminals in quotations.
The music they listened to, of course, had to be also criminal, which is to say
rock and roll.
So when
you're taking the persona in this poem, when you began writing this, and like as you read it again, are you envisioning her like, is this woman like, had she been, I mean, they were in these mother and baby homes where I'm assuming, and also rock and roll are being contraband. So she hadn't heard Wooden Heart by Elvis, but maybe moving around like the town she had, but was not listening in the church to it, but like humming along in her head, like when we have a song stuck in our head through loop. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, my like reimagination would be that it's not that she was listening to it in the home, but kind of like conjuring a time outside the home.
Yeah.
Outside.
It feels very like introspective in this poem.
Yeah. And like you said, just kind of there are these like rhythms and mantras, especially in times of like, you know, intense like emotion or trauma that you kind of like hold on to, I think. And I kind of like imagined that song as like a mantra too as well.
And then speaking to the poem as well. I think I clarified this beforehand, but it's just free verse, right? Like we weren't following.
There's no form. It's written in couplets.
Yeah. Hopefully I think we can find a way for a link of the poem itself to be posted along with these podcasts, I hope, or the pieces, so people can see it. Because so often there is also more to like how it's
totally
spilt on the page.
Yeah, like line
the
breaks.
Voice to it. Yeah, exactly. The line breaks too.
Yeah.
Well, with speaking of line breaks, maybe we go line by line. I had curious about this. What was that first line that came to you?
Yes. So I think this happens to me often. I said it before, but like the first line is definitely not the first line that I wrote. I think I started with like the lyrics from the song. And so I say a wooden heart carved from a borrowed tune, another letter to a man who will never sing. I think I started from that point of listening to the song, although in the song, Elvis is saying that he doesn't have a wooden heart, that he can feel things. Mm-hmm. But I was just kind of looking at a place of entry point into that like voice and into the story. So that's kind of where I started with the lyrics. And then of course, like through various drafts, I'm like notorious for changing things. Like,
and you said, you said revision is a blessing. You were saying something like that.
Yeah.
So big reviser here, big reviser.
I'm a big reviser for better, for worse. And it just like, I even think the poem that I sent to you, Joe, is different than the one that I wrote.
I think it is because I noticed when you were reading on air, I go, these lines are new. Yeah. I think the ones that I wanted to maybe get in depth about are the same. Those are the first like three couplets still the same, correct?
Since, I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. I maybe changed.
No, they are. They're good. Okay, yeah, okay. I think. Yeah, they're the same. Yeah. They're the same. He said, no, it's got to be perfect for airtime.
I also think like we don't think about poems as like living, breathing objects. And I think we should.
What made you? Yeah, I'm curious since now we know that this is truly I hadn't seen this revised version. Came and said, I'm going to throw something new at Joe. Well, partially new. What was it that spoke to you to then revise this poem since it's already gone through? So maybe what was it? And maybe you could like highlight the, not since we don't have the original or the past revision, maybe like just the sections that are newer if there's a.
Okay. So I definitely know I changed. Mm-hmm. Contraband Elvis. Mm-hmm. That was the one that I read, but it's in like an earlier draft. I think I sang
Desperate. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, like, I did want to change because I do think it kind of speaks to like the situation and the place that the poem takes place. So, that's part of why I changed it. I think I had like different drafts.
I think it's towards the end that I think it's just longer. This is also longer than before, correct?
I don't know if it's too much longer, but I do know the last.
When you bring up like, the My Father, is that new? That's what felt new to me.
I don't think that part's new.
Okay. I did not memorize the poem, so let me just
No, the father's been there.
Okay. Father's always
lurking.
Yeah, always lurking.
But I do think maybe I had like a changed the last like couplet a couple times. Whether or not to include the tree, but the tree makes a reappearance. Mm-hmm.
Well, I really loved earlier when you were discussing like the intersections of music here. Obviously, the biggest one being Wooden Heart by Elvis Presley, being something that this persona is conjuring, having heard, and then through the Rolodex of memories along with it. And it's the juxtaposition of actually in the song, Elvis like, I can feel things, I don't have a wooden heart. But I think when you first mentioned that, I imagined wooden heart as like almost something like wood is in hollow, like it would be a carved out heart. And it feels so perfect for this poem in the way of how we already mentioned it's introspective and that she's reaching out for something, someone the father of her child, mm-hmm. maybe even her own father, anybody else around the home. And I feel like when I imagine her after you read this poem, it's like large area, like the large part of the church where mass is held, and it's just her and echoes. Mm-hmm. And it's almost with a hollowness of like wood or wooden heart that it would just be like ricocheting around.
Yeah, I really like that reading. And I feel like it's true of like, even like the concentric circles in wood, like I just feel like there's that so image pretty. Of, and also like I think of records too that yeah. like are kind of like have those like.
Have you ever seen how a record's made?
No, I have.
Or when they like smash, like, no. And you can add like the different. It's also, I know that there's somebody who could explain it to me out there, but I'm like, how the heck did they say? Let me just take this tiny little. What do you even call it on a record plate? The little R? What do you call it? The dot?
The needle?
The needle. The Thank needle. You. The needle.
Yeah,
and like, somehow this is now just going to, sound's going to come out
yes.
of this.
Yeah. I think about that a lot. Like, we're so detached from that. We like just like.
No, somebody literally said, I'm going to make sound. And how? And I know it's just how I also think. I'm like, how do telephones work?
Yeah.
I don't know. Ignorance is bliss, man. Even though I think, of course, we could wrap our heads around it. Somebody did.
Yes.
To then make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just still always so stunned.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I know.
But yeah, as you were saying with records, similar to...
like a stump of a tree.
Yeah, I yeah.
Like those images like were things that I was thinking about returning to mm-hmm. in this poem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how they kind of visually look. The same.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, they're also holding like history.
Yeah.
And all of them. I think with the rings of a tree, when you look at a stump, you can count how old it is depending yeah. on how many rings you have.
Yeah.
And probably really old if you're out in like, it's in California where they have yeah, those old growth redwoods. Oh, yeah. I'd kill to see them.
I know. I gotta I've never get out seen there. Them, but I have.
Let's go.
Like really
After cool. this, Madeline, we go, we get on a red
a
eye
one-way
to get one way trip to Northern California.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of trees, for the last bit of this poem, I wanted to note your lines. Notes drop from my small window. Deciduous for you, I sing. Desperate Elvis, when did music become what we couldn't see but heard? Long before record, there is a voice that carried. When I was a child, I caught sound of a tree smoldering in the garden. Some of my favorite lines, I think, in this, you deliver us the message that music is also oftentimes delivered outside of music, outside mm-hmm. of an instrument, but in our daily lives, and yeah. an echo and a tree on fire.
Yes. Yeah. I love when there are like when people do, I think of maybe this is like the second time that I've talked about Fiona Apple, but
yes. different. Fetch the yes. bolt cutters, baby.
But she does a lot of
we her got recording. Some work to do.
Yes. She does a lot of her recording at home. She
wow.
has like a recording studio.
Yeah.
And a lot of times like her dogs are in the background.
And you can hear their shuffling.
Yeah.
I wish we had or a dog barking. In the studio. Right
I know.
Now. I wish
too.
We had maybe Madeline's got a wonderful dog. Y'all.
Yeah. I wish thing. Maybe was
yeah, shuffling around.
Shuffling.
Instead of just the squeaks of our chair.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, I think the last bit of this poem, we touched on how we can find music outside of an instrument or a voice, but also so often we can find wonderful music in an instrument and a voice. And you have chosen a song for us today, correct, Madeline?
Yes, I have.
What would that song be?
The title of this song is I Am Stretched on Your Grave, and it's by Sinead O'Connor, who's since... deceased, but is an Irish woman or was an Irish woman. Her voice lives on, so I suppose mm-hmm. she is still mm-hmm. an Irish
yeah
woman.
Let's keep it present.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know, do you want to, should I talk a little bit about the song?
I think we can we'll break for the song break and then we can talk about it after.
Perfect.
All right, listeners, this is I Am Stretched on Your Grave by Sinead O'Connor.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
And we're back. Thank you all for listening. I hope you all enjoyed that little song break picked by our guest, Madeline Sims. And yeah, Madeline, do you want to talk a little bit about our artist and the song and why you chose it?
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, I picked the song not knowing this, but Sinead O'Connor did not write this song. It's from a poem.
Imagine that. Music and Writing Podcast finds a song that is a poem.
Yes. So it's a well-known Irish poem, a 17th century Irish poet wrote, or I think it's an anonymous poem. Yeah. It's based on a 17th century Irish poem. Mm-hmm. And then there's like the name in Irish. I'm not really sure how to pronounce it, but.
Well, did I get, how do I say it's Sinead?
No, that's.
Did I say,
right.
I said it correct. Sinead O'Connor, okay,
Sinead O'Connor. But the title of the poem is in Irish and I don't know how to pronounce it. So I'm not going to try. But the poem in the song has been translated into English by the writer Frank O'Connor. No relation.
Okay.
And this informs Sinead O'Connor's like version of the song. Mm-hmm. And I did pick it because I do think that she's a person who really did speak out against these injustices that like the Catholic Church were so responsible for.
Well, I mean, one of her biggest was when on SNL as a guest star and spoke out directly.
Yeah.
I mean, really capital, well, not capital, yeah, like adding ripped, the Pope. Yes.
She ripped a picture of the Pope.
Yes. It was some, it was like
Saturday
there was
Night Live.
There was no subversion, direct hit on impact.
Yeah. There was like no room for
interpretation.
Yeah. And nor did she want there to be.
No. Yeah.
But that's kind of why I wanted to pick that song. And also we talked a little bit about this too, but it is a poem, and I think there's like there's artists that are like a little bit more lyrical in their songwriting, and I think Sinead O'Connor is one of them. Even though she didn't write this poem, I do think her writing is definitely more lyric in this way that like someone like the other example that I had was Joni Mitchell wrote the song The Magdalena Laundries, which is about the Magdalena Laundries that were in Ireland. And it's a story. It's like really narrative. And so I'm like always interested in I think for my own writing, I'm definitely lean more towards like the lyric reimagination as like a way of like capturing like these like forgotten histories or neglected histories. But there's also other ways, like the Magdalena Laundries song, which everyone should go listen to.
Always listen to Joni Mitchell in the reason. Yes. Not, so always listen to Joni Mitchell. Come on, man.
Yeah. But it's a real, like,
play Blue for the thousandth time. You will not regret it front to back.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of why I wanted to pick this song. And even though she did have kind of like her own life, she was a single mom and
single mom who works two jobs and never stops.
Even though she was she did have kind of like a complicated life and had mental health issues and but I do think she was like also, I mean, not, but she was an incredible artist.
Yeah. And she stood for what she believed in. I think what I love how you mentioned the intersection that I have discussed with friends before of like writing and music, where we can find musical artists that are such lyricists that if we stripped the song, I'd be like, well, I'm reading a poem here. And then almost it would have a same emotional impact even like without the music. And so I think that's a really clear way that we often find how music and poetry and writing interlace themselves. But I think what you get at by this choice with Sinead O'Connor is art is in literary form and music were both given mics and to have a chance to say something. It is your place. Grab the mic. She stood up for what she believed in. Like the Toni Morrison quote, all good art is political.
Yes.
And yeah, I think, and especially on tackling such a politically like charged topic like the mother and baby homes, I think the Sinead O'Connor was a perfect choice. And that's really where we can see literary fashion and music making interlace, where it's like, well, I have a microphone. And maybe one is like I don't know, at a concert and there's clapping at the end and then when it snaps at the end, but it's still the, I mean, where people are pausing and hushing to hear our words spoken. So
yes. Yeah. And like you said, like we do have, I mean, I think when I was embarking on this project, I had a lot of, I guess like confusion around like, am I the person to talk about these stories and these families and these women? But, you know, when you invest in like a lot of time and research and you are someone who has this gift of writing, it's kind of like, of course, like yep. there's no better person
yep.
Other than yourself. And like part of what makes obsession or part of what makes good writing is, I think, obsession.
Absolutely. And like, oh my God.
So obsessed as a person who also like I've done a ton of childcare mm-hmm. and also just, you know, am like a woman living in a world that also reproductive, a mm-hmm. lot of reproductive injustice is mm-hmm. ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just think that level like of research and obsession just makes the work. Yeah.
Absolutely agree, Madeline, because I think you really get to such a good point where, one, we were given a gift as writers. Got to use it for something you can amplify. But I think what the distinction that you're making is when you're saying that obsession makes really good writing, it's because especially though of, you hadn't been porn during this time, you were not around, but through shared histories, there's connection.
Mm-hmm.
But you spent time doing ample enough research and like mulling on this for years, having even spent time in Ireland, really got like to the heart as close as you could with something in the past about something. And I think that gives you more than warranted ability to be like, well, let me find my piece in this and slash share and find personas and tackle a project like this, where I think obsession makes good writing because you aren't cutting any corners then on any topic that you might not have direct lived experience to.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think too, what was like shocking to me in doing my research was like speaking to a lot of folks who were not necessarily directly involved in the mm-hmm. homes, but they were like, oh yeah, I knew an aunt or cousin, whatever, who spent time in the mother and baby homes, and just how many people knew about this, but like no one said anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, yeah, like a lot of times what has been recorded or, you know, remembered is like on this peripheral history,
mm-hmm.
even like mm-hmm. the Claire Keegan book, the main character is a father who just kind of basically has a like a in one interaction with one of
yes.
like women.
Yep. Yeah. It's at the well, spoiler alert yes. at the end.
Yeah. yeah. Spoiler alert. So fast forward if you want to read the book. All
it's also like well, it's that. A really. I mean, it wasn't my favorite book in Taylor's class. Taylor just has a great book club. Mm-hmm. One of our professors here in the program. And it is a very short read, though. Mm-hmm. It was a good one, but I finished it. I guess Taylor's going to know this now, but I literally read it the morning before class, yeah. or at least I started that night, finished yeah. it in the morning before class. It's only about 60 pages, maybe less.
I think it's a little bit more.
Maybe, okay.
Yeah, yeah,
I felt like 60. I got it all done, though.
It's like 100.
Yeah, 100. Yeah. But yeah, quit. And it's yeah. a smaller print book.
Yeah.
But yeah, if y'all have the chance to pick it up, I would. And
yeah.
you could definitely finish it within a day. And then, yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, Madeline, we had mentioned this had come up in a conversation earlier. But since we're now still talking about the intersections of music and writing, and we were talking about like the, at least with your song choice, how there's the intersection of the political mm-hmm. in both of these art forms. To skew slightly away from that, I remember we had discussed that I was like, okay, well, on SNL, everybody had to just like, you audience can't say anything. When Sinead O'Connor had her stand against the Pope, often at like a poetry reading, you can get some ums, you can get some heavy snaps, but you're not really gonna, and there's a politeness, especially also at a concert, even though I've mentioned how I've definitely more than once have been yelled at for at concerts to be shh.
Yes. Yeah.
But you had mentioned the first ever concert for classical music. People, tell me more about this.
Yeah, our so listeners have to hear like about this. Like fun fact. Yeah. Music fun fact.
Yes, yes. That every, yes, there you go.
So basically like, and this is all to say that I think that any art should elicit this response.
Yep.
We should be like, not just snapping. I'm like, I'm sorry, but the snaps are done. I get it. We're trying to
I can't
polite,
even really snap
like,
that well.
I am not a great snapper. I know how to like whistle really loud. I should whistle more at readings.
We can hoot and holler.
We're going to bring back the hoot and the holler.
Because that's what this is.
Because basically, like the first like kind of, I guess, concert with multiple instruments for like a crowd of just like everyday people. Like,
Do you know what year this dates back to? Or we'll just have our listeners fact check that.
I mean, this also, who even knows? I don't even remember who told me this fact. Someone but that I was think, concerned with music. So I believe.
Yes. And I also think that what you're going to say does not sound too outlandish. Yes. I'm like,
because, okay. Anyway, so the first like concert, whatever, and everyday people had not been exposed to multiple instruments being played at once. Mm-hmm. And as soon as they like experienced this, they like just basically lost it and were like screaming.
Ooh, babe!
Exactly.
Yeah.
They were doing that just for like classical music or multiple
issues. Hooting and hollering.
Yes, hooting and hollering. And also like I do believe that because I remember like in some film class, someone told me like when there was a moving train on screen, that, like people like ran out of their seats because they were afraid it was going to come alive.
Wow. Well, yeah, they're like, seeing the first moments of media being transferred in this way.
Exactly.
Yeah, I would. Yeah. It's almost as like, I mean, thinking about to when like cavemen probably invented fire.
Yeah.
I'm sure that guy was like hooting and hollering, man.
Yes, they definitely
they have
were.
To be, girl.
They definitely
like, girl, if you
were.
Weren't then like running around being like, look at this. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Screaming like a little girl. Yes.
We need to be like a little bit more.
Well, I mean, well, as two very expressive people, Madeline, which I think our listeners maybe can pick up on this episode. I when we first had this conversation, I agreed with you because it was like, I remember being at some symphonies growing up and being so astounded by the depth of emotion that like a chorus of instruments can create. Mm-hmm. And though we're talking about the intersection of writing and music, but no lyrics here, just sound. And I wanted to get up out my seat and like scream and yell and like thank, but I had to follow this culture of like prim, proper politeness. And I'm like, well, why at the end? I mean, best we could do is a standing ovation, but I'm like, I'm trying to go crowd surf among they need to jump in and crowd.
Like, can you imagine like if like the cello player just went crowds or which is to say if you
kill
play
the
cello maybe you need to crowd
that's next. What you gotta do if you're a listener who plays cello, you gotta jump into the crowd the next concert. But hooting and hollering about your art, that's a necessity. Take something from this, hoot and holler about it.
Yeah,
please
don't hold back.
Hoot and holler. Okay, well, Madeline, for the next part of your show, I have a question that I ask each guest, you being the first, so you get to be asked first ever. What are you listening to and what are you reading right now?
Okay, so I did start reading. Joe's gonna lose it a little bit.
What?
I did start reading Heaven's Code by Mark Doty.
Ooh, I gifted Madeline this book.
It's really heartbreaking.
It is.
Every chapter.
My hand. You can't see it. Me and Madeline are holding hands. It is so, but it's like you can't put it down though, because it's some of the greatest writing you've ever read, right? Like truly just how he can, the command of a sentence to be like,
beautiful.
That I'm just reading it. I'm saying it out loud to myself. And then I'm holding my chest.
Yes.
And then a tear is falling down my cheek.
Yeah. Yeah.
The epilogue. No, because the beginning. Preface, yes. The preface.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think when I first read that, how did I even get my hands on that? Oh, Taylor's Book Club. This was a suggestion of Taylor's in the Queering the Memoir class. I read this also when I got this off ThriftBooks. Madeline, did I tell you this? I got a signed copy 3 days before my birthday, signed for Kevin in Provincetown.
Oh my
God. So happy I found you in this time. Yeah. And my birthday is in actually like 2 days right now, I think, from when we're recording. So lovely.
Yeah.
This book, when I read that preface, I was like, this, if I were to like, if anybody would ask me, what do you think is compulsory contracted reading to know you and to like understand the world and how you want it to be seen, that preface.
Yes.
I'm like everybody. And I think it's, you can, like, if you actually just look it up on Google Reads, like it gives you just the preface. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the book, of course, you either buy or rent from, or check out from your local library. But yeah, it is. I remember my ex had been reading it, when they were visiting one time, or well, I had been reading it, and then I spilt on my coffee, the signed copy, water all over it. And they so kindly, being such a generous person, decided to take a hair dryer and do it for me while I was reading the ebook. So kind. And they started, like, of course, reading some of the pages, and they go, oh my God. And I can hear them start crying in the other room. And they're like, oh my God, no wonder you've been so sweet on me. Like, oh my God. So also context for the book, you all, is it is a memoir of Mark's life and also his partner, Wally, dying of AIDS.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I just like finished the chapter about the seals.
Oh, the seals. Yes. That's, he's also just, wow. Yeah. The way his, oh, just wait till he starts talking about his dogs, Madeline.
Yeah. I've already noticed.
He is.
I also read Mark Doty. Mark Doty was like one of the first kind of contemporary
amazing poets. Poet who's also a novelist. That's the thing. Best novels come from poets.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I had read like School of the Arts. That was like one of the first books of poems I've ever read.
Oh, really? And it was his? Okay, I've never read that.
Yeah, yeah. And
didn't know that title.
Yeah, it's really good. And I read it in my like high school creative writing class. And that's when I like thought that I could like do poems.
Yeah, well, I was also first introduced to his work via poetry as well. My old professor, thesis advisor Michael McPhee, gave me Fire to Fire, an anthology of his work. Mm-hmm. But yeah, now I've been so hooked on his nonfiction.
He's
also
prolific. Too.
I think I gave and I get, like, you know what? I'm gonna figure out how to get myself on the in one of the chairs for visiting writers, and we're gonna get Mark Doty here.
Just
or is it Doty or Doty?
I don't know. I say Doty.
I said it. I was talking with Wendy today and Wendy corrected me, but I can't remember which way.
Oh, okay.
I just want you to know, if he ever hears this, we think you're one of the most incredible writers of all time.
I'm so sorry if I was.
And I'm sorry we're getting your last name wrong. But I want you to know that your words are truly ingrained in our minds.
Yes.
Okay. But yeah, highly suggest y'all Heavens Goes by Mark Doty Doty.
Yes.
Either one, it's going to change your life.
Yeah.
And then, so that's what you're reading. Yeah. What are you listening to, Madeline?
I know that you asked me this last time, and I was like, I'm a little bit of in a music rut.
Mm-hmm.
And I do, I have been listening to.
Yeah, you haven't added to that collaborative playlist in a while.
I know, I haven't.
Shame, shame.
But this is why, because honestly, I've been listening to a lot of Bruce Springsteen. I'm like, I don't know. You don't want that on our.
The 4th of July is over, baby.
Yes, I know. I was
it's
listening
now the 8th
to it because of the 4th of July. And I was like, gotta get in the mood. Yeah.
Oh, man.
But I know that's a little bit embarrassing.
Well, I just want to, next time I see you, you got to be in a white t-shirt, blue light wash jeans, and you need a bandana sticking out your pocket, yes. And you can't face me. I can only see the back of your head.
Yes.
That's just one of like his album covers. Yeah, right? Yeah, okay, yeah, good. I was like, yeah. I really hope that.
Yes. This is landing. I don't remember the name of the album, but.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
Okay, well, speaking of songs, I don't have any Bruce in here, but we are going to move to our last bit of the episode, which is a quick quiz game called Line or Lyric, where guests are given rapid fire either lines or lyrics from songs, lines from writing or lyrics from songs, and they are to guess whether line or lyric, and it is revealed at the end. Are you ready, Madeline? There is no cash prize. We don't have that kind of funding yet. But you will simply have pride if won.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, you ready?
I'm ready as I'll ever be.
Okay. Another head hangs lowly. Child is slowly taken. And the violence caused such silence. Who are we mistaken? Line, lyric.
Wait, sorry. Which one's which? Line is poems. Lyric is song.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sorry. Lyric.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you have bonus points? Do you know who?
No.
Okay, we'll get there.
Okay.
Okay, second. All right. I made my song a coat covered with embroideries out of old mythologies from heel to throat. Line or lyric?
Line.
Correct. Yes. Okay, three. Every artist is a cannibal. Every poet is a thief. All kill their inspiration and sing about the grief. Line or lyric?
Lyric.
Correct. Okay, number four. This is a trick one.
Okay.
I think we all lost a little of respect for you there, Claire.
Lyric.
That one's a quote from Dairy Girls.
Oh, yes.
Hilarious, yes. Irish comedy show that y'all should watch about, yes, teenage girls growing up during the time of the Troubles.
Yeah, everyone should.
But I think it's Sister Michael where Claire then just like rats on everybody in that moment.
Yeah.
Can't remember about what. Going back up though, number three, correct, was a lyric. It's our baby Bono from U2. Achutong Baby is the song.
Okay. So Irish.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Oh, yes. Irish. Thank you. Number two was also a line. It was WB Yeats. Yeats.
Yeah.
Thank you. Oh, man. I got to really look at last names before I hit record. But this is from his poem, A Coat.
I feel like I've heard that one before.
You might have.
Yeah.
It was one that came up first. Yeah. I Googled his name before pulling this up. We are staying within the theme of Irish artist. Okay. The first one, are you sure? I'm going to read it again. I feel like you could get this.
Okay.
Okay. It is a lyric, but what band? Another head hangs lowly. Child is slowly taken. And the violence caused such silence. Who are we mistaken?
I'm like, is that Sinead O'Connor?
No.
Oh, I don't know.
And what's that other super famous Irish band who had a pretty famous...
Oh, the Cranberries?
Yes, what song?
Oh, like Zombie?
Yes! me about to do charades. Yeah.
I feel like this is really a vulnerable moment because I'm notoriously bad at remembering lyrics and things like that, but I'm proud of myself.
Yes, I'm you. That is a 100%. Well, except for the last, but that was also just a trick question.
Yeah,
that's 100%. I wish we had a cash prize. I wish I could hand you a big old Benjamin right now, baby.
You are handing me a metaphorical Benjamin, yes. And I accept.
Yes. Well, thank you, Adeline. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of our inaugural episode, Madeline. Do you have any last thoughts, any notes, also any place where we can find you, anything for the listeners?
Sure. Well, I wanted to thank you again, Jeff.
Oh my God, my pleasure.
Not only having me on your show, but it is quite the honor to be here.
Yes.
And as Very for glad. Me, I'm like, I do have a website. It's MadelineSims.com.
Amazing. Pretty easy.
My name.
Sims with two A. Speaking of last names, though, yes, Sims has two M's.
Yeah. A lot of people forget that.
Yeah.
But don't forget that second M.
Yeah.
She's important. And she's green. Mm-hmm. Sexy. Like the green sexy. Oh, no. Okay, anyways, Madeline Sims. Never forget. Now you're never.
I just want you guys, I hope listeners out there, and this is where my mind would have taken it, is that they're just imagining you as the green M&M, and that's what Matt's. Yeah, the green M&M is just named Madeline Sims, went to Alabama's MFA program, and happens to be a good friend of mine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, I think that's what I have to plug.
Okay. Yeah, perfect. All right. Well, Madeline, you thanked me, and I'll have to have the last word, though. And thank you yourself for bringing your beautiful writing, sharing it with us and our listeners, and bringing some knowledge of music and some insightful discussion, and also a great 100% on the liner lyric quiz. So I feel like I have a feeling that the next episode I'm like, nobody's ever gonna get 100% again, and you just reign supreme. Oh. But maybe let me not wish that upon my other guest.
Yes. Yeah,
I just love that on the first episode you did get 100, and I'm like, well, that's the bar.
Yes,
every guest now has to come on and
the bar has been set.
Okay, well, you'll have to make sure that the bar is met. You'll have to tune into our following episodes. There's more soon. All right. That was the first episode of Right Between the Lines on WVUA 90.7 The Capstone. Thank you all.